In 1998, I found myself on a hillside in Chiapas. I've shared this story with some of you, and I share it again because it was so formative for me, and I hope that it will be for you too. It was the anniversary of a massacre in a place called Acteal, Chiapas. In 1997, December 22nd, a group of Catholics, diocesan Catholics, pacifists committed to the peaceful ways of Jesus and Martin Luther King and Gandhi, were killed as they were fasting and praying. 250, a whole community of men, women, and children, and 45 of them were killed. It was a terrible, terrible time, and I remember gathering on that hillside right after the massacre, and we had the empty coffins there because the bodies hadn't been returned yet to the people. And those of us who survived it or were friends of survivors were so furious, and we wanted revenge. We wanted to catch the perpetrators. We wanted to get even. We wanted somehow to make justice right then. And the survivors of the massacre said, "Forgiveness. We forgive. Not forget. We will never forget what happened. But we will remember those lives broken that day in and through our own lives." And over the next year, I experienced how that they lived that out. And so this particular day, a year later, when we went to commemorate that massacre and sit on the site of the tomb, thousands of people came from all over the country to be there because there was a threat of continuing violence, and it was thought that an international presence would keep violence from breaking out again. And as we gathered on the hillside, there was a big cross that was made with rope, and inside the cross were 45 people. We didn't count, but we noticed that there were members of this group called the abejas, the bees, and they were there in their indigenous dress, and there were women and children and men. And the bishop came out on the stage, and he said, "Don't be afraid, but we're going to reenact this story. We're going to remember those who died." And then some boys came out with wooden rifles, and there were fake sounds that sounded like very real bullets. And people in the circle, in the cross, fell face down in the dirt. Men and women with children on their backs, and children fell and stayed still, and those of us around them were shattered. And one sob became 100 sobs, became 1,000 sobs, as we remembered the losses of that day. And after what seemed like eternity, two figures appeared at the top of the hill, both dressed in white, one dressed as a doctor and one as a priest. The doctor, a woman, came down the hillside and began to raise people up and lift their arms up. And the nun and the priest and the doctor did the same thing until all 45 of them were standing like this. And all of us, as if we knew what to do, stood too and raised our arms up. And the bishop, Samuel Ruiz, came out on the stage and he said, "Christ is risen. He's risen indeed. Let's celebrate communion, remembering the ones who walk in and through us beyond death. God gets up and goes on." I've never been able to live through an Easter experience without remembering that and seeing how it changed us. Seeing how that process, that play, that didn't leave us with the empty tomb, didn't leave us with a story in our heads, but left us with a memory of the rising of God's people, of the memory of the actions of God in and through people who came and lifted them up, of the memory of the community that surrounded all of them and said, "Presente." Jesus is not dead. God rises in and through and around us. I went on over the years of my ministry in Chiapas to see how this little community of survivors, of children and women and men who lived through the massacre, the injustice of that, the agony of that, who went on to create cooperatives, who went on to create a community that welcomed all God's people, Christians, Catholics, Protestants, when Protestants had been the perpetrators, Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, People who weren't people of faith, all were welcome there. And every year we remembered and reenacted that same experience. And it changed many of our lives profoundly. It's been for me an example of how the story is lifted off the page into our lives. Our Easter story can be redeeming, literally life-transforming, but unexamined, it can complicate and perpetuate experiences of trauma. Easter isn't a Hollywood ending to the story, the life and ministry and arrest and the torture and the execution and the rising of Jesus. It's not a moment. It's not a destination. It's a process which we enter into. And Luke's gospel, more than any of the other gospels, give us a glimpse of that process. There are many who don't come to church on Easter because they're living their own traumas, because it doesn't make sense to them that Good Friday happened 2 days ago, Good Friday of what we call Holy Week, which seems to be anything but holy. And today we get up and put on our Easter bonnets and have Easter egg hunts and come to church and we celebrate. It's just too hard to move that fast from trauma to resurrection. And it doesn't happen that way in life, does it? Those of us who know, who've crawled out of the empty tomb to go and tell about the angels that we met along the way, we know that resurrection is a lifelong process. When we celebrate Easter with a big splash, put a happy face on it, and go away smiling without acknowledging what got us here, when we go from Palm Sunday to Easter Sunday and skip Good Friday, we leave people behind, people in our congregation who are sitting right here in the pews among us who are saying, this isn't my experience, this isn't my story. I can't buy the idea of a body of a man being raised and getting up and visiting people later. I'm still in pain years after my traumatic experience. So how do we as church present a story that is really life-giving? How do we show the resurrection process to people who come, who are in great need of resurrection practice? Today, we live in a world of crucifixions. We live in the midst of attacks by ISIS in which thousands of Muslims and Christians and Jews and all kinds of people are being killed, of the Zika virus, of gun violence, of our broken healthcare system, of incarceration, of economic dislocation, of family split. We live it. We need the Easter story, but we need more than pablum. We need a real meal to be able to get up and go on. The cross is a mirror to the violence in our own individual and communal lives. When we enter the Easter story, we awaken our own experiences of trauma and violence. That is natural. Every one of us today is a survivor of trauma. Every one of us has PTSD to some extent or another. There's primary trauma and secondary trauma. We can experience it ourselves and know it, and to our body it feels like utter annihilation. But if we're loved ones who witness that, or if we see it on TV over and over and over again like we did after the events of September 11th, we're re-traumatized. We can be victims of one cataclysmic trauma, or it can be every day at our work where we experience unjust relationships, oppression. It can be a relationship that's broken, and every day we go home and we feel unsafe. Trauma can come in many, many different forms. And when we don't recognize the part of our Easter story that is trauma, we don't allow ourselves spaces to heal. We don't hear the bigger story. We move too quickly from trauma to hope. So I want to talk this morning a little bit about the relationship of trauma and grace. I, through my doctoral studies, have discovered an author, a theologian named Serene Jones. She is the president and dean of Union Theological School in New York. And she's written a book called Trauma and Grace. And she says, as Christians, we have all the tools there. We have the story there to help us heal from trauma and not go on and repeat it. Luke's gospel has this story where the women who've accompanied Jesus from Galilee, the men and women who've been at the foot of the cross, some of whom denied Jesus, some of whom ran away and hid, some of whom sat and watched until his very last wrenching breath and stayed until his body was taken down off that cross and followed the man who got his body from Pontius Pilate and took it to the tomb and saw the stone rolled in front of the tomb. We know that experience of trauma. Luke's gospel lays it out for us. And so when the women get up before dawn and they go to the tomb, we can imagine what they feel like. You just don't wake up the day after trauma and go happily along with your life, on with your tasks. But women do what they do. They change diapers, they make food, they dress and they anoint the body and get it ready for burial. And others do what they do. They hide, they run away, they gather together in a closed room because they're so afraid. No one of us is one of them. We are each of them and all of them. It's our collective story, and we've all reacted that way to traumatic events in our lives. And so Luke has the women go into the empty tomb. The stone has been rolled away, the first act of grace. Something is happening that's beyond any individual or community involved. They walk into the tomb, and there are two angels there, aglow. And they say, "Why are you looking for the living among the dead?" Why do we look for the living among the dead? How long do we linger in that empty tomb, hanging around with death? Our own deadened selves, our deadened world, our deadened dreams, a loved one we've lost. How long do we do that before someone whispers to us, maybe God, maybe another human being, maybe an angel, "Get up and go out with it and share the blessing"? Luke's story shows how this process of grace starts and goes on. It doesn't end with Peter going to the tomb and looking and not seeing, not going in the tomb. It doesn't end with the women leaving and telling the 11 disciples and the disciples not believing them, thinking that what they say is nonsense. The good news goes on. God gets up and goes on. Not literally, but figuratively. Jesus appears somehow to those who survived. The first time is on the road to Emmaus, and the disciples are walking along. They're exactly like we are after trauma. They're so caught up in the story, they're reliving it. That's a symptom of post-traumatic stress disorder. They're going over and over in their mind what happened. They don't even recognize Jesus when he comes up. He walks with them for a while, no recriminations. He listens to them. He hears and holds their story. He accompanies them. That's what we're supposed to do as church. Luke lays it all out there for us. He goes with them. He stays with them. He doesn't just hear their story and say thanks so much and leave. He stays with them. He shares the table with them. And it's in the breaking of the bread that they recognize him. In the breaking of the bread at the table, he eats with them. And then he comes to the disciples in the room. They're closed up with their fear. They've locked the door, and he moves through the walls and he breathes peace on them. That is what God's grace does after trauma. Our job, friends, in these days where hatred and fear-filled rhetoric so fill our world, our job is to breathe peace. Say, "God's peace be with you, not as the world gives, but only as God can give. Peace. My peace I give to you. My peace I leave with you." When we leave a room, we leave peace in our wake. And Jesus goes on to appear to the disciples until they don't need him anymore, until they've got him inside them and they can go on. That's what we do. That's what we do with our children. It might be strange to have a sermon like this on Easter Sunday, But we ask our children to believe an unbelievable story. We ask our children to know that Jesus is on the cross. We sing the song, "Were you there when they crucified our Lord?" We sing that Jesus Christ is risen. But how do we get our kids from the trauma to the rising? I think it's only to tell the truth, to say life is hard and injustice happens. And our faith tells us that God does not die, that death does not have the last word, nor does injustice, that God gets up and goes on and depends on us to help that happen. God asks us to be the blessing that goes out into the world and is multiplied. And so God rises among and in and around us. And let's face it, Good Friday is every day. There are crucifixions every day. Every day we and our children experience terrible things. We see it on the news. It might be happening in our own life. And we have to have a foot in Golgotha or Calvary, and another foot in that empty tomb where Jesus says, "Get up and go on," and trust that in taking the next right step, God will meet us there. God will meet us there, and we will have what we need to go on. Christianity doesn't need to discern the relationship between trauma and grace from a blank slate. After all, our faith was founded on the story of the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus. So in a very real way, our central story is one of trauma and grace. Not just grace. Grace doesn't come. Or rather, grace comes more profoundly, and healing comes more deeply after the trauma. Can we imagine, as we come to church this morning, that Easter really happens? Is it just a story for us? Or is it an experience that we enter into and we remember? We remember the angels in our lives. We remember the crucifixions, the injustices in our lives, and we remember how God got up and went on. Can Easter be more than a story for us? One that we can imagine getting up and going on in very real and positive ways? Evangelism has a bad name. But evangelism means sharing God's good news. It's not about belief, it's about practice. People know we're Christians by the way we love, not by what we believe. Can we enter the story and believe it today and go out of here and be a blessing to our world? May we be an Easter people. May it be so. Amen.